Hello, welcome to Overburden, the podcast for post-workers. I am Kevin Hitchings.
And I'm Brandy Hughes.
And today we're talking with Mr. James Ball. He's going to tell you about what he does. He's the organizing coordinator for the Prairie Region. And he's just going to talk about what he does and how we're going to get the region fired up and get things done. So if you want to introduce yourself and give us a little bit of a clear overview of your position.
All right. So I'm James Ball. I'm the regional organizing coordinator for the Prairies. That's including Alberta, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and the Northwest Territories. My job is to take the Building Worker Power campaign to all of the locals, to visit on the work floor, to build up our contact lists, and to train members on the material that we have in order to empower them to defend their rights on the work floor.
Right. We've mentioned this campaign a few times, but not a whole lot. Just to make sure you don't get it confused with the Building Community Power, which is the green initiatives, the postal banking, that kind of thing. We've done many episodes on that. This is something a little different.
Yeah, and it's also not the Building Power to Win. That was the campaign last year.
There seems to be a theme in the names that National yes. likes to call things.
There are a lot of similar elements to the Building Power.
I had it explained to me that what you're doing now is the next step of those two previous campaigns being combined into one and really rolled out to the members.
That's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, having the community presence through building community power is important in establishing sort of like goals that we would want, expansion of services, security, and jobs. But at this point, it just comes down to getting our members behind the process, enforcing our rights so that we can put ourselves in a position in the future where we don't have to strike. And by that, I mean, if we're vigorously defending our rights on the work floor, the employer and the, which is really actually the Canadian government and the Canada Post Corporation, will be looking at us and going, these people are serious. They're defending themselves. They're acting in a united fashion. Let's just negotiate. And that's something that in my time at Canada Post, I've never really been through an honest negotiation with the employer.
I completely agree. I've never seen us not forced back to work to take a crap contract that nobody wanted.
We talked about the education workers in Ontario and their fight with the government there using the notwithstanding clause. And you can't do something like that. You can't defy legislation in the government without solid support from the floor. And this is really about building things from the floor and then going to all levels beyond that and getting solidarity among the members.
I completely agree. I believe it's OSCBU, I believe, Ontario School Board. I'm sorry if I don't know the name properly. I know I had a little bit of contact with them. Our local chose to write a letter of support to them unanimously at GM. I'm sorry, I'm from the Edmonton awesome. Local, although I am representing the Prairie region. but we chose to send a letter of support to them, as well as send a letter asking for, should their strike had to have resumed, that we would encourage our national to potentially find more resources to assist them. But I don't know if we're necessarily ready for that. I mean, our members, I feel like, I don't think they're being engaged, but I think they're ready for it. Almost every local I've contacted so far, when I get to them, they'll bring shop stewards in to talk to them, or I'll speak to some of the executives, and a lot of them are saying, we need this on the floor. And my own experience with the earlier version of this program out of Edmonton was really engaging the membership. And I know that like COVID's been a real struggle. It's been a real struggle even for the local in Edmonton. But we haven't missed a general membership meeting as far like 4 or 5 years. We've always made quorum. We've generally, we're over 50 people.
Did you switch to virtual meetings like we did?
Yeah. Okay. We actually only just recently had a combined meeting. Mm. And that's something that we're working on locally, both for our bylaws and technologically.
From a selfish perspective, can you explain how easy or hard that was to run a combined meeting?
It has its challenges, but like I said, we're in the process of actually setting up a proper system.
Oh, okay.
One of the things I was concerned with is that we had engaged our members outside of the Edmonton area. We have a very large geographical area.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd engaged them, and Zoom made it very good for them to join us. And I was concerned, as some of our members are demanding to go back to in-person meetings, that we would basically just be pulling the plug on those members.
We found that in our local, too. Like, it was beautiful to have ones from Humboldt or or further away, just actually able to participate without making a 2-hour drive, just come to a meeting.
Yeah, and I mean, really, 2-hour drive to come to a 2-hour meeting to drive 2 hours home on your
own. It's not worth it, no.
But those are challenges faced in the prairies, and I know that I'm looking at those challenges where I'm you know, if I have to go to Manitoba and go to Winnipeg, but I also need to visit Brandon, but I'm not going to be able to do that the same day, right? Because we our shift's fairly similar. I was speaking with Grand Prairie and talking about visiting their affiliates. They have a couple of affiliates that are in the dozens of members. But they're 3.5 hours away, so I still have to consider that, because I need to visit all of our members.
This is a huge geographic area, and I know we've gone into some of our affiliate offices, and some of them are very receptive to the union, some of them are almost combative against the union. That's going to be a huge challenge, just getting on the floor, and getting on the floor in the first place in the geographical area we have, but just dealing with all the different members and different attitudes and getting them on side if you can. Yeah. You want to talk about some of the challenges of how the plan attacks that and what your goal is when you get to each local initially?
Geography is a huge challenge, but that's just one that's just going to take time. Speaking to the locals, I don't want to come in with anybody thinking that I'm there from National to tell anyone what to do. I'm there to offer skills and tools. And I need to make contact with the executives and their members, and then seek their permission and guidance to visit the workforce to speak to the members. This isn't a plan where I'm going to send out just bulletins and just visit the executive and expect everybody to just fall in line. The plan requires me to physically go to as many locations as I can. Have a short floor talk with the members, or a lunchroom talk, or meet people where they're at and speak with them, or have a short discussion, and then go onto the work floor and speak with the members directly, ask them about what they are. And I do realize that there'll be some conflicts. I've had the joy of meeting some of our more challenging members, even in my own local. That's where they are. I can't criticize them for where they are. I need to maybe hope them that they take one step over. But I have the good fortune of working with a really solid program, and I'm very familiar with it. I've been using it for 5 years through my own, but in my own activism on the work floor. I didn't just get here. I was an activist with an idea after, the corporation very quickly identified that they don't give a crap about my contract. And then I did meet Roland Schmidt, and he had a more complete plan than I did, because mine was just sort of being built on the fly. I guess somehow it just worked out that way. It tied together. But since that time at the depot that I worked at in Edmonton, the employer had at one point replaced the parking with vehicle parking for the corporation. But then the city came and removed the parking in the street. And when we said, well, where are we going to park? The corporation's like, not our problem. Yeah. And they, don't acknowledge the fact that in the collective agreement, it says that it wasn't a new facility, but they have to build adequate parking. But it also says that they can't make it any worse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Roland Schmidt is the third national vice president in charge of organizing. He was the president of the Edmonton local until recently. Sorry. What we're currently doing in most locals, I think, is when you see a problem like parking or something on the work floor, it's turned over to the shop stewards, it's turned over to the executive, and then the floor waits for results and hopes. And, this is more about, there's things the floor can do as a team and as a union, and a union should include everybody. And we want to be grassroots, we want to keep the bottom people involved. And this is about motivating us as a group to take action against the employer, not just relying on those few officers that in some cases are extremely overworked and overstressed and put in a lot of volunteer time.
The more I worked with the office, the more I realized exactly how much work they have to do. And I think that if any of our members could spend a few days in the office, they would not question where that dues money is going. Mm-hmm. And they do face a great deal of challenges. I've stepped into that role a few times as the vice president of my local, and they do definitely have challenges. But the key factor here, though, is that it's providing the members with the knowledge and the skills to defend themselves. And by that, I mean, even just coming down to the basic identification of what can you do? Mm-hmm. So if you're facing down a bully boss or unfair practices or straight up violations of our collective agreement, if you go to your boss and say, hey, you're doing this wrong, you're not going to get anything done. That's just the reality. I mean, I've tried it. I've served many a suspension for supposed insubordination, although they don't know what the word means. And I've served suspensions for doing the work I was given an order to do. But so doing it yourself is not the way. And I've never served a suspension for taking 25, 30, 40, 50 members to the boss's office and telling them this is unacceptable and it needs to be fixed. I won't say it hasn't happened to people, but that's also a discussion you have to have with your members before you take those steps.
Would you say that you don't get the negative response from the employer because you can kind of spread the blame when you go in as a group? Like they can't pick out a ringleader. It's like when you're at a rally or a demonstration and they say, who's in charge? And they go, oh, no, we're all equals. Nobody's in charge. You can't arrest
Spartacus,
me.
Spartacus, yeah. I mean, there's some truth to that, though. So I think it's just I don't want to overbuild anyone's confidence. The discussions are had ahead of time where you discuss what you're going to do. And you don't just go in and say, we have this problem and now we're going to go stand and, you know, perform a work disruption. That's not how this needs to work. That's not a safe way. And I don't think anybody would necessarily really want to jump on that. I mean, usually we'll start just by identifying the problem and making demands around that problem, whether that comes in the form of a petition, which is very low risk. It's just saying, we've identified this problem. Here's the solution we want. Here's all the signatures of everybody in the depot who agree with this petition. And I've never seen anybody punished for that. I wouldn't necessarily put it past our employer for someone to try, but I've never actually seen that. But what ends up happening sometimes with petitions, sometimes it actually works. And then sometimes it doesn't. And I, in my sort of balance, I kind of look at how much it's going to cost the corporation. And the more it costs, the more resistant they're going to be. They've been taking power from us for 40 years. You know, our brothers and sisters work very hard to maintain that and do very good work for what we have. But again, that system is overburdened. You know, we're just at a conference where we were talking about electing or creating a new position, somebody just to handle STDP files, or a new UR position just to help out with the workload. And that's a completely just ask, right? Like but traditionally CUPW has never been a service union. We've never been that. And we've always been a union that's based off of workers running their own union.
And that's what it's about. It's not letting the employer dictate every detail of your life and punishing you for doing something right or wrong as they see fit. It's about returning power to the workers and being able to defend ourselves on the floor when we need to, and not just taking this crap abuse, which will, you know, it's good for everybody. It's cuts down on grievances massively, because, you know, if we can stop them from abusing the contract in the first place, we don't have to file these grievances. We don't have to waste time fighting this stuff. You don't have to wait years for your money to come back sometimes, or whatever the problem is. And this is really about improving everybody's work-life balance and stress level at work, and getting justice and equity on the floor.
I feel like that translates to, if you can stop the members from being wronged at step one, then you don't have to make it up to them later. You don't have to make them whole through the grievance process,
right?
Because the wrongness didn't continue to the point where people were damaged.
I can say that I have a stack of grievances as a shop steward, probably as thick as my thumb, that have not been resolved. And I don't fault our grievance brothers and sisters.
Sometimes
for that.
You have to go there.
Yeah.
Well, the process is employer oriented. It's meant to go slow. The entire grievance process is meant to frustrate the employer.
In the time that I've had grievances for, you know, flyers with inserts that aren't secure, that everybody signed on to, that will cost the corporation $500, in that time, we have basically forced the corporation to probably spend upwards of $20,000 a month to provide us with a parking lot and shuttle us from the parking lot, and also take another one of our local depots, which was half of a building, purchase the other half of the building, upgrade that facility to meet the requirements, and then transfer an entire postal code from the depot I work at to the other depot to solve the parking problem.
Wow.
I never filed a grievance on that.
So that's a huge problem with huge results that comes from work floor action, whereas in some places it's tough for us just to get a fan in a depot, just, you know, what is 30 degrees and get people cooled down, because that's because it's easy for the management to say no to two or three executives, but we get 50 people on the floor taking real action, not just, you know, complaining and hoping somebody deals with it. That's what we need, is real action on the floor to get real results.
Yeah, no, I want to give absolute credit to the members who work at those depots.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I may have been going around saying, this is the problem, these are your rights, and we should do something about it. But what I do is based almost entirely off of their will, right? I'm not there to tell them what to do. The system fails if somebody tries to use it to get just what they want, because how many times are you going to line up behind a guy who says that he wants something and you should fight for him, and then you get potentially punished out of it?
Right.
Right.
It has to be a group game.
It really does. And it's always go back to the members. Go back to the members. You know, if you're presented a list of demands, the whole point is to present that list of demands and then leave. The management will try to negotiate with you, but that's not the job that you have. They can come back with their own counteroffer if they like, but then you go back to the group and you say, is this acceptable? Are we willing to accept this return? Does it meet our demands? And if it does, great. If it doesn't, are we willing to accept this, or do we want to push further? But the people who are on the work floor are the ones doing this work. it still ends up that there will always sort of be an agitator. Mm-hmm. I fill that role apparently quite well. I'm an excellent letter carrier, which means I like to complain a lot. But a lot of times people do just want to come to work, right? Yep. They just want to come to work and they want to go home. But I always want them to go to work, be safe, be healthy, feel rewarded, feel like they've come to a place where they enjoy their work, and go home and enjoy their time with their family. But I don't see that. I see people who are coming to work overburdened, tired,
scared sometimes.
Scared, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They don't put their nose down because they're just trying to make it through the Christmas season. They're putting their nose down because they don't want to make eye contact with their managers, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen that in depots. But this really is an outreach program to some degree. And a lot of people say, well, what is your union doing for you? But we are the union, and they are doing. They are lifting mountains, but it's not enough.
So when you present, when you go in and you present possible actions for them to take, do you get people who say, oh, no, I can't do that, or, oh, that's way out of my comfort zone? And how do you deal with that?
That's just reality. Not everyone can do this. I mean, some people are not good with confrontation, and that's why part of the reason you do it as a group, both as a show of strength and both to provide comfort. And security. Mm-hmm. But not everyone is going to participate. Not everyone has to participate. There's always going to be a condition. You know, maybe somebody just, they're mortgaged to the hilt, mm-hmm. and they're afraid, right? Maybe they don't see it working because it hasn't worked yet. Or, you know, maybe somebody's promised them things and before, right? So relationships are key. I mean, I feel that the depot that I was at for 8 years, that if I call the work floor meeting, people knew I wasn't there to waste their time, mm-hmm. right? But that's because they knew me. So this is why it's important that this becomes a local run program, because it needs to be, the relationships need to be there, right?
And it's not just a take action to solve an issue, it's changing the attitude on the floor. Like, nobody's mm-hmm. going to go out there and demand a new building first day. You're going to go out there and demand that you're allowed to load level, and or allowed to, you know, adjust the temperature in your depot or something like that. Start with small things, build up faith in the process. And, you know, you should have say in everything that happens to your depot. And that should become a habit, and it should become standard, and it should become routine, and it should be something the boss is scared of and expects. So that once you get in that habit, then asking for a new building doesn't seem so scary anymore.
Well, you know, the funny part actually is we never asked for the building.
Yeah, just took it.
Yeah, it was we wanted, we kept encouraging them, and probably the entire time I worked for Canada Post, they told me that they're going to get a new building at some point. Mm-hmm. But they keep signing new leases on this building. And but we just basically put them in a position where they had to provide it to us. And they chose that it was probably less expensive in the long run to expand another depot and move the routes.
Did you manage to force them to break the lease and cost money that way?
No, they still have the building. Okay. They just, you know, they were always complaining about not having enough space in the depot. And that depot, quite frankly, was turning into a bit of a fire trap at Christmas time with all the parcel loading.
Mm-hmm. And they definitely wouldn't want to risk the flyers. You don't want nothing to burn there.
No. There's no suppression system in that building, and apparently that's legal.
Ours is like that, too. It's grandfathered in. It's such an old building.
Yeah, exactly.
Our fire alarm is...
A doorbell, essentially.
Well, or the supervisor grabs the megaphone and goes, fire, fire, fire!
That's how our procedure works, too.
I have to ask, if you get a number of members to participate in an action and there are other members who don't, do you find that it's difficult to maintain the solidarity because the members who participated go, well, those ones should have participated, why didn't they stand with us?
I've never encountered that yet. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I've never encountered it to the point where it's become a conflict that I've been aware at. And almost all the actions that I've performed have been at my own facility. So I'm in the facility on the same day. There are always the naysayers. There are always the people who don't want to be involved. There's always going to be something. But, you know, you just need a large group of people. It doesn't have to be everyone. Mm-hmm.
And it's results to get people on board. You win a few, more will come over. And you got to... I think part of the process, too, is making people understand right away that, hey, you're not going to get buy-in. We don't want to have judgment. We're a union. Whether people have different comfort levels or different views, we're a union. We have to stay united. We can't be bickering about ourselves because one guy participated less than another person did.
So you've actually kind of answered a question that you asked earlier, and I kind of avoided answering a little bit, which is, what do you do when you get to a place that doesn't want you to be there? Right. And the reality is all I can do is offer. Mm-hmm. And if they're not interested... I'm not going to take that personally. That's their decision. I will continue to offer those skills. I'll still come to your local. If you want me, I will continue to contact you. And I hope that as successes pile up, that they will become aware that this is a potentially successful program. And I mean, if you need another crisis to rally around, just wait. Canada Post likes to create them. Yeah, it sneaks up on them every year. I think it might be in January this year.
Probably.
Yeah.
I wonder if you face difficulties from executives who feel like you coming in might threaten their power base, which I find it an interesting thought, because personally I feel like if you can get the members fired up so that they stand up for themselves, that takes some of the workload off of us executive members because we don't have to step in as much.
It does. I want to make sure that everybody knows I'm there to work with the executive and to work with the members. And like I said, I'm bringing skills and tools. And ultimately, I want to leave those skills and tools in the hands of the local. The program is designed in such a way, in case anybody doesn't know, a lot of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers education courses, like shop steward courses, those are courses that there's a requirement of you having previous training to teach those, and that's our facilitator training. The Building Worker Power Program is designed specifically to be taught by anyone in your local that is selected by your executive. So I will spend the time to teach with that person, presumably. Like, my intention would be, depending on the size of the local, obviously isn't possible in some small locals, would be to teach that member in a class and then have that member co-facilitate with me in the second class.
And then after you're gone, do they continue to run sort of classes and trainings Absolutely. In their local so that they can spread it to the new members as they come
If
forward?
I have to keep coming back, that just makes me the expert, and the whole system here isn't designed for a system of experts.
Amanda Fish.
Sorry. It's about building capacity in the local.
Yeah. And it's about it becoming their program. And, I've talked to a number of locals and... Some of the people kind of look at it and they say, well, in this course, you talk about Edmonton and you talk about Edmonton and you talk about Edmonton. And that's not to grandstand. That's just because the material was developed and evolved out of Edmonton. Mm-hmm. But I've already said to people, if you make your own stories, I will gladly try and help you integrate them in. So this becomes your story, your class. Right? Because, I mean, I think having pride and success, I don't think we celebrate our achievements enough. And, I mean... Sometimes it feels like maybe we don't have those achievements, but like with pay equity, there was a little bit of fanfare. But I don't feel like we really celebrated that.
That's actually something that's always kind of annoyed me. Every time we talk about the huge wins the union has and how we've so influenced the labor movement and how we still influence the labor movement, we talk about how we won maternity leave in the 80s, which is great, but we have done a ton of stuff since then that is almost never mentioned. And we are a very activist union. We've changed the whole labor movement across the country many times, and it seems like that has gotten forgotten in a lot of ways.
I was the education officer for the local in Edmonton just prior to and during COVID, which made it particularly challenging. Although because of our terrible provincial leadership, we did take advantage of renting large halls and putting small groups of people in them to educate from occasion on time to time. Masks, of course, hand sanitizer everywhere, and social distancing. And it made some of the courses awkward because a lot of them are fairly physical and get up, move around, participate. And I don't necessarily know if it served the members very well, but the fact that we still had some trainings with shop stewards during that I thought was very important. Oh, one of the things that I had thought about doing is because I'd find these little odd bits out of everything. Like in the shop steward class, there's a small section on our history, like just the general history back from the LCUC, CUPW days, how we became one union, some struggle around that, but a lot of steps that came along the way. But it's generally kind of passed over in the class because those classes, that material, if you add up the time values they put in each section, it's not 3 days or 2.5 days. It's like 4 days. So, but that material is kind of designed to be used by any local at any level. Mm-hmm. But I thought about maybe putting on a history, like a little history seminar. I didn't get quite around to doing that. COVID had a real kick on that. But you know, as we move out of that, I just now at this point where I'm looking forward to some members who stepped up to take over the education office now that I've moved out of it. And supporting them through that, and maybe they will take up that fight. You know, I want people to know that I'm going to come to your local, and although I hope for a warm reception, I'm also, you know, I do have reasonably thick skin. I understand that there is a lot of frustration in their members, but I'm here to offer you tools to solve those frustrations. I can't necessarily fix the problem for you, but I can give you the tools to fix it yourself. And I hope that I know that we'll be successful if we're faithful to the idea of it. I'm a true believer. I've been doing the process for a while, and I mean I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe in it. Right. And I think that as we become more successful, the process will build. And I think that, you know, there's this word we like to use in the union, it's solidarity. And I've had some struggles with it over the last while, and I've had to sort of analyze what that is. And one of the things I determined is that solidarity isn't something that I can ask of you. It's something that I can offer you. And when we start offering solidarity to each other on the work floor, and I think you'll find that that has happened because there will always be something. One of the strangest moments for me early in my organizing was when that guy who is always vocally speaking out against the union was coming to all the work floor meetings. Mm-hmm. Because he wanted to know about it, and he never spoke out about it, against it. He was always involved because the reality is that the parking problem affected him too, mm-hmm. Right? And if you have a cause that the members are rallying around, you won't need to worry so much about that. And you'll know when the members are rallying around it. If you work in a facility with 200 people and all you got is 8, well, I mean, maybe. If it's an issue specific to, say, your section or that this is still something you can use these tools for. But if you're trying to, if you think you have a great idea, but nobody comes out to it, well, I've had some great ideas too that never went anywhere, right? So, and it really does come back to the membership. What do they want? What do they want to fight for? Mm-hmm. You know, how far are they willing to fight it? And you can have all these conversations. And the more frequently you have these conversations, the easier it gets. And I think the more likely you'll find honest responses and the engagement. I mean, I didn't come to the union hall because it's the union hall. I used to be in the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. I was a member for probably 12 years. But that union is really like a hiring hall. You know, they got me jobs. They got me paid. They got paid. Great. But it's a different world there because my jobs would be, you know, 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months. It's not a continuous employment situation. And so when I knew I was in a union, I just thought it was kind of like that. And I kind of thought, well, what's the point?
You had
right?
No idea
like,
what you were getting into.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was getting into. And here I am, vice president of my local, working as the regional organizing coordinator for the Prairie region under the third VP nationally for the Building Worker Power Program. You know, I got involved because I was being an activist on the work floor, and it was noticed, and it was harnessed. And the reality is, you know, I've lived my own life, and we've all been let down by supposed leaders in our lives at some point or another. So, when I was approached, it was, you know, okay, sure, show me what you got. 6 months later, it's like, okay, what do I do next? How do I help more? And I've seen many members do that.
So it fired you up so you could fire other members up.
I mean, when you're given a set of skills that is so easy to use, that even if you do it poorly, you're successful. Because I'm not going to say I'm some sort of like brilliant mind at doing floor organizing. I've had better moments, and I've had the members come to me, need to address this now. What are we doing? How are we doing it? Just go. But I've also had actions that take weeks, months. Mm-hmm. The parking lot thing is like, it sounds like, oh, yay, we got routes to move to another building. That was 3 years, right? But we had successes along the way. And then we came back where the corporation was like, oh, well, we've decided we don't want you to have you park there. So now we're going to send you over here. Well, that's 45 minutes away in traffic. If you miss the bus, it's an hour and a half before you see the next one, right? And that's not acceptable to us. So we've had that argument again. Not only lasted a few days, because I think they even realized how ridiculous it was. But it's never going to be a short process for big items. Like I said earlier, the corporation's been taking power from us for a very long time. And even if you're just using the tools we have to defend the rights that are in the collective agreement, they're not going to give you that power. You're going to need to take it. Mm-hmm. And there will be struggles with that. But I don't see how anyone can resist the idea of just defending your rights. And the more I talked and the more I learned, going to Ottawa to meet with the other regional organizers was an eye-opening experience for me. I met some amazing people. It was a really great experience. And I love them to death. I don't get to see them nearly often enough. Although we do weekly Zoom meetings, it's not the same thing. Right. And it's very structured what we're doing at that point. But I realize that there are a lot of problems that are national. They're national problems. And this isn't part of the current extent of the program, but I see a vision for this program where someone becomes a coordinator for the area where we have, say, Camrose and Grand Prairie and Winnipeg all saying, hey, these are the issues going on in my facilities, to that coordinator. And they say, hey, I know who also has those issues, and they're all working on something. Why don't we get groups from each of those centers together, combine our efforts, and then perform actions at the same time? Like I said, that's not currently on the agenda, but I have a little bit of a vision of how I see this. Because if you can spread that action out, it's just that much more impact. You mm-hmm. know, it matters so much more. And it's part of the part of this job is to spread the information. But I kind of hope that part of it later on is to be the coordinator. Because even in our own local, it can be a struggle to while you're on the work floor. You know, I'm not a full-time officer in the role in my local. But when you're on the work floor, it's very difficult to coordinate with other work floors. And the parking lot issue is a bit unusual because most of the facilities in Edmonton, where I'm from, have reasonable parking. But there are other cities that are having those issues. I know I spoke to another executive recently and provided them some knowledge and insight on how to handle that. But they've also had some of that information already provided before this program was started nationally. So the program works, and it was spreading on its own, the fact that Roland got into the third VP position and then the executive voted unanimously to support the campaign is fantastic, and it's just going to accelerate the progress. It was already beginning to take off in the Prairie region, and I know that there has been some interaction in Manitoba and in Alberta. I think some in Saskatchewan as well. But this will really, you know, I think there will be some members who be like, oh, this is just some little program locally. But I think if I show up and I'm saying, hey, this is a national campaign, mm-hmm. we're doing this and we need you to help us.
We need to grow and foster a culture change in the union. And it needs to come from the grassroots and grow itself to a large extent. We just can plant the seeds is all we can do. And when we have a culture change on the work floor, it will force a control change on that horrible employer of ours. This bully culture, the only way to end that is to change the culture. And we need a united front to even have any realistic hope of doing that. And this is what we've come to. This is what we're working on. And that's the end goal, where we're moving towards.
Yeah, bullies don't respond favorably to being asked nicely.
I found it interesting that you said that you offer them solidarity. But I don't think that's all you offer, because to speak to what you just said, when they know that they're not facing their challenges alone, when they know that if the employer is picking on them, that the person next to them is going to stand up and say, hey, you can't talk to my brother or my sister like that, and you can't do that to them, that you're violating their rights, and then the rest of the Debo comes over and goes, hey, no, this, we're all behind this. I mean, you're giving them safety. You're giving them a feeling of mental and physical health, because they know that somebody's got their back. And that's a beautiful feeling to have, to know that you're not alone.
It really is. And you can, you know, I mean, even like offer, like before I was heavily into activism, or when it wasn't necessarily a group issue, I knew that there were some members who were treated more poorly than others. And I would arrange with them or with their people working around them that if the supervisor was coming to treat them poorly, to offer your solidarity to that person who's being treated poorly, stop doing what you're doing. And even if you're not willing to, you know, confront the boss on this issue or the bully, just watch what's going on and note it down. Pull out a notepad. It's the most terrifying thing you can do a manager is pull out a notepad and take notes of what's going on with your coworker. I've seen conversations that I could hear them in one row of cases from the next, and the conversation tone changes entirely when I walk around the corner.
Yeah.
Right?
Because they know you're listening.
Because they know somebody's listening, they know somebody's paying attention, and it doesn't have to be a shop steward. If you talk to the people in your row, you all have the same problems. This isn't, you know, one of the things I did at the convention here when I gave my speech was I asked people to stand up if they've ever been bullied.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people stood up. I asked them if they've ever been, you know, had to been forced to work two runouts in a plant, doubling, you know, their workload instead of having it properly staffed. I only asked three simple questions, and people, almost everybody was standing.
Yes.
And just look around. Your coworkers have the same problems you do, mm-hmm. but you're not tackling it as a group. And like I said, I'll ask the question. If you go to your boss and you say you don't like it being the way you're being treated, they're probably going to treat you worse. If everyone in your section or a large amount of you go into their boss's office, you know, using your right to complain, which is a fantastic right in our collective agreement, mm-hmm. and in the RSMC agreement as well, that, you know, if you use that right, and you speak as a group with a defined cause, they're much more likely to listen.
I've heard some of the much older members say back in the day, the supervisors used to be scared to come out of the office. They were afraid to set foot on the floor. And I don't think we want to have such a culture shift that we become the bullies, but we need to have a culture shift where they step on the floor and they know they need to give respect to that floor. That's what we need to be.
All I've ever wanted out of working here is to know that my contractual, my legal binding collective agreement, mm-hmm. the agreement between the employer and the members of CPW, would be honored to the best of both abilities. I know that there will be small details that will be quibbled over, but we're not talking about small details. We're talking about people using personal days letter carriers using personal days because they desperately need them, and coming back and finding that only the parcels in the flyer section got delivered. Mm-hmm. And in our collective agreement, it's clear that the employer has a responsibility to offer that up as callback or pay you as overtime for it. At your choice is whether you want to do it or not. But instead, they just say, oh, we'll give you a couple of days to clear it up. Well, now you've paid them to deliver mail. RSMCs right now, all they asked was to be adequately compensated for the massively skyrocketing fuel prices. And the same thing happens, I've seen it before, where the employer says, well, that's the government's arm and they choose how much you get compensated. And the government says, no, Canada Post has the absolute right to compensate you more. And they say, well, we can't do that because that'll just increase your taxation and it's the government's discretion. And they just go back and forth and they use each other. They're the same people, right? The employer is Canadian government. The corporation that operates that employment.
Yeah, the Board of Internal Economy is really our ultimate employer.
Yeah. And so they're advocating, whether it's just through ignorance or not, active participation, I don't know, I can't say, but they're advocating to steal from you. Mm-hmm. And that can't continue. That needs to stop. But the only way it's going to stop, because although, like I said, the grievance process can have some success, I refer to it as my retirement fund, right? I'm going to get all those days back that they, you know, suspended me without justification at some point. It'll be a nice little bonus. But the problem is that people either don't grieve, or they get tired of grieving, they lose faith in the grievance system because it takes so long. Mm-hmm. And that's a system that only works when both people want it to work, and it's just a matter of them not wanting it to work. So there are always reasons to actually have a grievance. There's always reasons for that. And, you know, I mean, if you have a pay issue, you got shorted an hour of overtime on your paycheck, take it up with your shop steward, visit your supervisor, your staffing officer. They'll probably fix it. If they don't, absolutely grieve it. I mean,
for sure.
And but you know what? If everybody in your depot was getting denied an hour of overtime every week, how much does that up to? Like, that adds up to a lot. So if this is a constant problem where they're taking from everyone, well, obviously the grievance isn't going to solve unless you're going to file one every day. And then you're just deferring it to later where maybe you need that money, right? Or you could have invested that money. And sometimes I think about how they delay our contracts every time. And I think if I was a corporation that was, you know, a $8.5 billion a year business, I'm pretty sure I could put enough money in a high interest investment account and I could basically pay off the mild increases in your wages. Maybe this is a little too heady for some, but they could pay off the increased cost of your wages for your next contract before you even get there.
Yeah, and there's the idea that, you know, it costs them because they're going to have to pay us back eventually and back wages when we do get the raise. But they're hanging on to that money. They're investing that money. They're making money on that. They're using it to automate our jobs and take them away. That money's not just sitting there waiting for you.
Yeah.
And it's your money that they're using against you and using to profit themselves.
So you were paying attention to my speech, I see. Yeah. No, and then that's absolutely right. Like, you are the breadwinner for the corporation.
Right.
You do the money making. They do the money spending, and they're choosing to spend that money on slowing down the grievance process. They're using that money to steal from you. They're using that money to automate your jobs. They're paying lawyers. They're doing all of those things when they could be using that money to make our services world class. They could be using that money to expand our services to ensure that we have that security of job, of employment, and security of finances. And they could use that money to make your life better. I mean, I know in the contract that there's something about how they can give us bonuses based off of the profit margin.
Mm-hmm.
They have some really creative accounting, I'm sure, but I've never seen that.
Yeah, we've talked about how they zero the books at the end of the year and fake the deficit before.
Are you talking about the CTI bonus?
Yeah.
They did have those in my local when I was a casual, and they stopped right before I got full time, so I never did get one.
Yeah, yeah.
I always felt kind of choked.
So hopefully a lot of our listeners are fired up and ready to go after the employer if they weren't already. And you're obviously not going to teleport to every local within the next 3 days. So in the meantime, how do people get involved in this program? Is there anything they can do as their resources? What would you advise people to do while they're waiting?
Talk to your local about the program. Go to your GMMs. If I have spoken to your executive, in some cases, some funds might need to be moved. Although it's up to your local how you spend your money. I'm not there to tell you how to do that. We traditionally try to make it as open as possible. There are some people who would be good leaders and good activists who, you know, have family commitments or job commitments on the weekends or in the evenings. So if your local is willing to spend the money to train you, and I've always believed we should put our money where our mouth is, and I've always thought that education is a really important thing. So if your education, if your local is looking to move money, because not everybody's budgeted it, you're going to have to do that through your GMMs and through your budgeting process and make motions to move money depending on the level of finances you need. But if they're not going to do that, you know, you can still encourage them to have it. I will come free of charge to the local on the weekend to teach the course if I need to. I'm dedicated enough that that's not a problem. I believe in this and I want to spread it because me teaching these skills could make your life better. And ultimately, in the long run, that makes my life better. This is a reciprocated process. And so speaking at your local, making other members informed about it, we are working in the process of having a website, but part of the thing is when I come to see you, we're trying to build a contact list for all of our members detailing where you work, the shift you work, and get if you want to share it with us, your email and your phone number. Initially we'll probably just be sending out bulletins about where we're going and the ideas of the program, and being involved, have a conversation with your neighbor. Maybe even that's all you need to do. If you just had a conversation with the people that you work with and said, what are the issues that we're facing? What's the one thing we do? What's the one thing that the employer does that is affecting us negatively? And then just ask the question, what would happen if all of us went to them and said, this is a problem, we need it fixed? You know, that's a very basic idea. I would broaden that to have it in writing, mm-hmm. have a reasonable, believable, like have a reasonable goal of what you want. And the minimum for that should be what it says in your collective agreement. But have a date set when you want a response by. Like, make this a professional document. And maybe I'm getting a little too far ahead, but this is not a complicated process. Mm-hmm. The question is, what do you do when they say no, right? And that's really what we talk about in the course and how to go about it properly, how to go about it in an organized manner, and to do it as safely as possible. One of my favorite moments that I had to discourage someone to participate was I met a young man while we were doing one of the work floor actions at my depot for the parking lot. And He jumped up and he's like, I'm in. And I looked at this very, very young man and I thought to myself, I don't recognize you. I said, what's your name? I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He was all in. He was ready to go. And I just said, how long have you worked for Canada Post? He said, oh, I'm on week 8. And nice. I said, so you don't have your 480 hours yet. 420?
I can't remember.
But he's in. And I said, you know, I really appreciate your enthusiasm and I definitely want to talk to you. But at this moment in your career, I don't think I want to single you out. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, until you've got your hours in, they could, in theory, dismiss you for any reason they like. They'd have to justify it and we would fight for you. But I don't know if you can afford to be unemployed. And he's like, well, no, not really. And I said, I definitely love the enthusiasm and we'll talk again. And I hope to see you after the 480 hours have passed. And I did. But he did transfer on as temp life goes, mm-hmm. moving around quite a bit. But, you know, we have to protect these people. And sometimes people are enthusiastic, sometimes they're not. This one was, but he needed, like, he was very vulnerable. So the important part is to protect those members who are vulnerable.
Okay, so if we've got people curious about the program and they want to learn more or perhaps arrange for you to come to their local, how do they do that? How do they get a hold of you?
Well, so I'm contacting all the locals in the region. I am contacting the executives, first. I want to make that my initial contact. But we are working on a website. I don't have it for you now, okay. Unfortunately. the processes. We're building a lot of these things as we go. We're only a couple of months into the program. I look forward to having Regional has given me the green light to provide them with bulletins on where I'm going and when I'll be visiting your area. And I believe we're working on a QR code that we could be putting on that will at least put you into a position where you can sign up to the mailing list and make us aware that you exist, right? Like, nice. That sounds wrong because you exist. We all know
you
exist.
You already know.
But your locals have more information than I do. CRTC regulation says that National can't just say, hey, can we have your list? We require your personal permission to gather your information, although your local may already have it. So that's part of what I'm doing is that I have to come and physically come to you and meet you and ask for your permission to join us. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you do. I look forward to it. I see a lot of success in our future. And I do offer my solidarity to you. And I hope that you feel that you can offer it to me.
Awesome. I want to thank you, for coming and talking to us today. I think we hinted at it earlier, just so everyone's aware, we're at regional pre-convention in Edmonton right now. We're doing this from a hotel room. So that's where we are. But yeah, if you have any questions, you can always contact the show. We're both executives in our local. We'll help you as much as we can. And, if we need to pass questions along to James, we can try and get a hold of him. He's very busy, of course. Just build that solidarity and don't lose hope. Better times are coming.
I think we can do that. I really do.
Yep.
If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, as usual, you can always contact the show at overburdenedpod@gmail.com, and we will talk to you again in a couple weeks.